Silence?
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 182 of Nerd Pride Radio. 182? Oh, so many 182 facts. First off, Wikipedia mentions that 182 is a rep digit in the Denis number system. Okay, or Denis, D'NI. All right. I don't know what any of that means. So rep digit means that all the digits are the same. So in base 10, for example, 77 is a rep digit, or 222 is a rep digit, because all the digits are the same. So 182 is a rep digit in the Denis number system. Well, what the hell is that? So I look it up. It is the number system invented for the game Myst. Myst and Riven, and maybe there was a part 3 to that one. I don't remember. But it was invented for the Myst game, and it's a base 25. So why not just tell me it's a rep digit in base 25? Why did they have to? I don't get it. But anyway, it was interesting and nerdy, so I got that. But then I also found, obviously, look, I say 182. I think Blink 182, the band. And, okay, so why 182? Well, because when Blink went to name themselves, or when they started becoming famous, whatever, they were just Blink. And it turns out Blink was already taken by some Irish electronica dude. And so therefore, they had to add a number to it, so they decided to add 182, which, according to them, is the number of times that Al Pacino uses the word fuck in the movie Scarface. Now, I don't know about that. I mean, it sounds plausible. And I think to myself, okay, what's the record for that? So I look up on Wikipedia, give me a list of the movies that make the most frequent use of the F word. And it turns out that the movie Scarface, the whole movie, it doesn't give me by person, but the whole movie Scarface has it 207 times, which would mean that if Blink-182 is right, then Tony Montana said it 182 times and the whole rest of the cast combined only 25. Possible, I guess, maybe. Who are you going to trust, Wikipedia or Blink-182? It could be right. It could. But then I wondered to myself, okay, so who's at the top of the list? And so I roll up to the top of the list, and the record holder is a Canadian comedy called SwearNet. It 935 times they use the word fuck in SwearNet. And SwearNet is particularly a movie about some comedians who want to create a radio network where they're allowed to swear as much as they would like. So it is a movie about swearing, so no surprise that it hits right at the top. And then the second place finisher is a documentary called Fuck, the documentary about the history, origin, and usage of the word itself. And that movie, I mean, to SwearNet's credit, SwearNet hits 935. A documentary about just that word only uses it 857 times. So, but those don't really count. I mean, those were movies particularly about using the word as much as possible. So, what's the real movie, I guess, for lack of a better word, that uses it incidentally more than any other movie ever? And it turns out it's The Wolf of Wall Street. 569 times. 569 times in Wolf of Wall Street, which is a 3-hour movie. That means that movie had one fuck every 19 seconds for 3 solid hours on average. Wow. So that's pretty impressive, right? All right. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oh, my co-host this week, it's Puddles the Clown. Wow. All right. By the way, one of my YouTube channels used to be Postmodern Jukebox, because I love Postmodern Jukebox, right? But it turns out that they just annoy me lately. It's been months since I've seen a good Postmodern Jukebox cover that I thought was worth listening to. So I unsubscribed from them, but they still show up in my list all the time because I've seen enough of them. But one that did come up was Puddles the Clown. And, I mean, look, I've talked about Puddles before. You've probably seen him, but Puddles is a gigantic, like, he's a 6 foot something. I mean, he's like almost 7 foot tall. Maybe he is 7 foot tall, but he is a sad clown who sings sad songs, and the guy's voice is gorgeous. And, so I got to listen to him this week. Go out to YouTube yourself, seriously, and look for, Puddles Pity Party and Pinball Prison Blues. It is a mashup of the lyrics to Pinball Wizard to the tune of Folsom Prison Blues, and it is really amazing. It was a great one. So check them out. And as I was watching him, I thought to myself, hey, you know what? There's another cosplay I could do. I could cosplay as Puddles, couldn't I? Wow. And it would be really cool because lots of people would recognize it. I mean, it would be, it's not one you see every day, but you'd get a lot of recognition. The only problem is, would I have to shave my head to make it most effective? Can I get a good bald cap that would work for me for this? I mean, I assume I can get a good bald cap. I've never had one, never worn one, but I assume I could just do a bald cap. But either way, what a good cosplay. I really like that idea. Okay, before we get into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, first, I need to do a little meta talk.
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, meta talk is where I pull back the curtain, open the kimono, do a little inside baseball, just talk about the podcast, the website, stuff behind the scenes. And I just want to let you guys know, I'm using a new microphone this week, and it is different, and so I have already found myself a couple times stumbling over my words because I'm really distracted watching the levels over on the side, and the levels are really good with it. I'm liking the way it works, but it is a new microphone, and so therefore we'll see how this quality turns out. And then, after this, the next thing that happens with this microphone is, now that I have two USB microphones, I have discovered that there is a way to aggregate these into a single recording device and have my recording software, Audacity, have it recognize both of them as a single device so I could have two mics going at once. Now, the problem is I could not find my old microphone on Amazon, and so I bought a new one that was recommended, and it actually, I'm really liking it. I think this is going to work out really well. It's just going to take some practice. But the problem is if the two microphones are different, they may need their levels set differently, and so aggregating them into a single unit so that they both have to take the same settings, it may mean that my new microphone comes out really loud and the old microphone comes out really soft, and I may not be able to balance them correctly. So I'm going to play with that a little bit for next week's podcast if one of the kids wants to sit in with me. We'll see how that works out, but I'm getting there. I'm getting closer to it, and you know, and for all that matter, we'll see. We'll see. Like I say, I'll give it a try. We'll see what works. Again, if you notice anything weird about this week's podcast, let me know. If there's sound issues that are unusual, let me know, and I'll see what I can do about them. See if there's some adjustments that I need to be making, because like I say, I'm going to be a little distracted. I'm watching the levels. I'm watching the numbers go by here, and I don't, I like it so far, but it's going to keep me distracted for a bit. So sorry about that. But also, before we start the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, updates! Hey, teleporting. Wow. Last week, Kyle asked a question about teleporting, and I gave some answer off the top of my head that probably had no basis in science or fact, but I like to state my opinions as if they have science and fact behind them. And what I got from Sarah Beth was an update on this, pointing me to an article where scientists are claiming to have teleported a particle 6 kilometers. That's pretty amazing. Now, when they say teleported a particle, here's the a photon, a single photon is what we're talking about. But here's the issue with it. It is the particle in question, it was part of a quantum entanglement, meaning two elementary particles are together, and then they separate and go in opposite directions. And now, the two of them have what is known as quantum entanglement. I don't know how you establish quantum entanglement. I didn't do any actual research other than reading this article, but I've seen it many times before. And the idea is the two particles have interacted, and now they're moving away from each other, but they still have this quantum entanglement so that something that happens to one of them will also happen to the other one at the same time. The trick is that doesn't normally tell you a whole lot because, well, you would have to know the state of the one to even understand why changing the state of the other one makes any difference. And what these scientists have done is by sending these out over fiber optic lines, when they were 6 kilometers apart, they were able to change the quantum state of the one, which thus changed the quantum state of the other, which apparently they were ready to receive or whatever. And so what happens is the information on one end, even though they say it's teleporting, they didn't really teleport anything physical. What they teleported was information. So that by tweaking this particle on this end, in whatever way they did, instantaneously, 6 kilometers away, scientists were able to tell what they did. Like an instantaneous travel of information. Like normally our information has to travel at light speed, which over, 6 kilometers is nothing. I mean, it seems instantaneous to us. But this was really and truly instantaneous. And so therefore, it's brilliant. Now, is it true teleportation? You can question that because again, it is not the physical movement of an object, or of any matter itself, but it is the movement of information so that the quantum state of this particle, the information about that transfers from one to the other over that space and potentially could be used in quantum computing, could be used in interstellar communication, could be used. The idea that we could use this process to communicate instantaneously over interplanetary distances. The idea that right now, it takes, half an hour or so to get something to Jupiter, say. All right, half an hour, 45 minutes to get to Jupiter, depending on where we are. And instead of having to send out your message and then wait an hour to an hour and a half for the information to make the round trip, get your response, and find out what their reply is an hour and a half later, maybe we could set up instantaneous communication and you don't have to wait. And we can't teleport ourselves. We still have to move it at, boring old sublight speeds, but the information could be moving faster than the speed of light, like instantaneously. That's how much faster. That would be pretty amazing. So anyway, that was our update. Now it's time for the meticulously planned. Oh, wait. No, it's not. One more bit on MetaTalk. This is going to be a weird episode because we've got to get to Scouts. We're doing highway cleanup today. So I've got to take Noah and Eli with me and we're going to go clean up. We got a 2-mile stretch of highway that we clean up with our Scouts. And so we're doing that. And so that means I'm going to get in about, probably 35 minutes of recording here before we have to go. And then I'll try and finish up the podcast afterwards. But depending on how busy the day gets, may not have time for that. So I'm going to leave Listener Betrayal open, which means Listener Betrayal could be running for like 8 hours today. And then hopefully I get back to it in a timely fashion. But I may say, okay, guys, I'm off to Scouts at the 35-minute mark and then just never come back. And that's the whole podcast you're going to get. So we'll see how that works out. Anyway, now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. Finally, this is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list. And the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into it. First up, it's my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. That's right, board games, video games, card games, Was there another one that goes in there? I can't remember. Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games. There you go. Any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. I played two new games this week. One that I got for my birthday, Forbidden Island, and finally just got around to playing it. And I love Forbidden Island. This was really good. It is a co-op game, and it's super simple in concept, so easy to set up, easy to play. And if you have played Forbidden Desert, then apparently Forbidden Island is a lot like Forbidden Desert. I've never played Forbidden Desert, so I don't know. But as we set up and we got to playing, Colin, one of the guys at Game Night with us, Colin, we get into the setup, and he's like, oh, it's like Forbidden Desert. I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means, but all right, I'll go for it. And then later somebody else passes by, and they're like, what you doing? Forbidden Island. Oh, is it like Forbidden Desert? Okay. Well, so apparently everyone knows Forbidden Desert except me. But Forbidden Island, great. You lay out your tiles on the table, and your tiles form your island, and then there's this flood mechanic so that as you play, your adventurer is trying to recover treasure from the island, and then you have to get to the chopper and take off. Well, while you're doing all of this, portions of the island keep flooding, and if a portion of the island is already flooded and floods again, then it sinks beneath the ocean and it's lost forever. So the island is slowly getting flooded, and as much as you keep trying to restore it and keep trying to bring pieces back, your island just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And the really hard part is that there are some essential pieces that you need. Like, you know, you can't recover the treasure unless you can get to that temple. You can't escape unless the landing pad for the helicopter is still there. So, it's a co-op game. It is very, very much like Pandemic in my mind. I mean, it's not as complicated as Pandemic, but it's very much in the same vein in that you're all working together. You have mechanics for the things that you can do, and each different player in the game has its own special power so that, oh, well, if you're going to be shoring up flooded areas, this guy can shore up two flooded areas in a single move, or this guy can do things diagonally, or this one has extra move to it. So each player has a different superpower within the game. But otherwise it's very much the same, you know, so that's like Pandemic, very much the same kind of cooperation, the traveling around the board and having to do, there are multiple different things that have to be accomplished as you go, having to trade off items with other players to get them where they need to be. But again, it's simpler than Pandemic and just tons of fun. It set up really easy. It was very quick to play. We wound up winning really easily because we played it on easy mode, and we missed a couple of rules that, had we known about those rules, it would have made it a little bit harder. But, you know, it was our first game, so it went really well, and we were very happy with it. I would play that game again in a heartbeat, so, and I plan on playing it pretty soon. So if you are interested, Forbidden Island, it is a simple little game, a lot of fun, a lot of flavor to it. I really enjoyed it, so that one was good. But also the other one we played was Oregon Trail, and I am telling you, the Oregon Trail card game is a bear. Another co-op game. All right, that part I didn't expect. Apparently, everybody at the table is all in the wagon together, and we're wagon training from Missouri to Oregon, just like in the game, and along the way, terrible things are going to happen, but we're all working together, and there are times where calamity befalls you at every turn, just like the game. So, you know, flooded rivers, the oxen die, typhoid, snake bite, there's hunting in the game, there's all these things that could happen to you. And when bad things happen, generally there's some sort of resource that you have to spend. And it varies, but usually you have about one turn, one go around the table before it gets back to you. You have one turn within which somebody has to play a resource card to save your ass. And if nobody can play that resource card to save your ass, you die. And then you're out of the game and you fill in your little tombstone and then you just get to watch. Or sometimes if you can't come up with the resource card, then everybody dies. Or sometimes, I mean, there's different conditions. Sometimes most of the time you've got one turn. But sometimes you've got, well, until this next card comes up, you're okay. But boy, the minute that card comes up, you're dead. Or if it's the snake bite, and this is where I felt bad for Colin. If it's the snake bite, it is, hey, you were bitten by a rattlesnake, you're dead. That's it. Like, no saving it. There's no way to prevent it. There's no anything. When you get the snake bite card, you are out of the game, period. Holy crap. And so this whole time, as all this is happening, you're building this trail from Missouri to Oregon, and ultimately you're going to have 50 cards out there, 50 pieces of trail connected to finally get where you're going. And it is hard. Holy cow, is it hard. So, you know, there's 50 cards, so you can measure your progress. Our first game, we made it 46% of the way across, and then we died. And then the second game we played, we made it 84% of the way, and then we died. And it is just this, oh, it's just so desperate. Just so desperate and terrible, because the whole way across, it is, you start off, everyone's got 5 resource cards in their hands, and I mean, it does not take long. You are very quickly spending resources, and there's lots of times that, you know, if you can't cross the river, then, oh, you failed to cross the river, okay, pick a supply and throw it away. Crap. Oh, you failed to cross the river again? Pick a... Oh, jeez. All right. You don't have the right supply? Well, that's okay. You can take 2 supplies and trade them in for the right one. Oh, God. So now it takes 2 supplies to go ahead and clear... I mean, just... So by the end, by the last... That last few minutes of every game, it's always this desperate, just hoping and praying that whatever the next calamity is, you happen to have the right card, or... That, okay, well, if we don't get this, we're going to die. Let's hope we stumble across a town pretty soon, because, oh, miracle of miracles. Okay, we can make it for one more turn, and then you still die. So I know eventually I will play this game enough that I will survive, but I think it's going to be a rare thing. I think Oregon Trail is going to be one of those that we all sit down and we all have a great time dying every single game. I think that's just how it's going to play out. And I'm looking forward to it. We had so much fun playing Oregon Trail. I don't know if I've made it sound fun, but it really is. It's a game that you're going to play as a co-op game. And all you need to do is, if one person survives when the wagon hits Oregon, y'all win. Everybody wins if one person survives. That's all it takes. And yet, we all get together knowing that, no, we're going to die. This is pretty much it. And yeah, there's a bit of nostalgia factor in it. For a lot of people, I mean, everybody around the table, whether they were 15 years old or 50 years old, had played Oregon Trail at some point and knew exactly what we were talking about. And it was really fun. So anyway, if you haven't picked up the Oregon Trail card game, it is worth your time. I really had a good time with that. So there you go. All right, what's up next?
Don't know much about history.
That's right. It's the unnamed history segment. And I put it in history, even though it's also current events. But I'm going to talk about Fearless Girl. And you guys have this article came up. The article that first got me turned on to this came up over a week ago. And I was very interested in it. And it made this great point. And now, it's just some guy's blog. It's Greg Fallis, by the way. Well, Fallis. Fallis. Let's say Fallis instead of Fallis. F-A-L-L-I-S. But anyway, Greg Fallis at gregfallis.com talked about the Fearless Girl statue, and he made some really good points about it. And so I was going to bring it to you guys. And then just last night, as I'm putting all this into my notes for the show, I come across on Facebook 2 different places that are linking big articles to it, where now it's been picked up by all the major news outlets. And so it's not going to be original to me anymore, or at least not original to Greg, and I can pretend it's original to me. So if you've heard this, well, I apologize, but I'm going to go through it anyway, because the whole point about Fearless Girl, if you are not familiar with Fearless Girl, she is the statue that was placed on Wall Street in front of the statue of the Charging Bull, which, by the way, the Charging Bull's statue, its name is Charging Bull. It's very simple. And Charging Bull has been there since 1989. Charging Bull has been around forever. It is a symbol of Wall Street. It's been around so long. And so when Fearless Girl shows up, Fearless Girl is a statue of a girl in, I saw it described as a Peter Pan pose, this defiant, you know, arms on her, hands on her hips, arms back, shoulders back, you know, chest thrust out against the charging bull, which is, you know, some good yards down the sidewalk from her. But clearly she is facing off against charging bull, and it's a really cool statue. I mean, just this really cool piece of art. It's very empowering, very strong, and just cooler than crap. I love Fearless Girl. I think she's awesome. All right. But the point is that the artist that created Charging Bull, Arturo Demotica, the artist has said that he doesn't like Fearless Girl being there because that's not what his work is about, and Fearless Girl changes his work, and therefore she needs to go. It's not fair, and you know, this is not what he created Charging Bull for. And he's got a point, because lots of people loved Fearless Girl. Loved her. All right, now there's rising protest, and people are now turning against Fearless Girl for the reasons I'm going to give you here. But you got to know that Charging Bull was originally created in 1989. It was in response to the stock market crash of 1987, which, if any of you are old enough to remember that, was really dramatic. All right, we had this sudden downturn in the stock market, and for some of us, we thought, oh my God, it's the end of the world, and it turns out it wasn't. But man, it just seemed like it. When you hear stock market crash, our first thought was, oh my God, does that mean we're entering another Great Depression? Does that mean we're, and it turns out we weren't. But I was 17 at the time, and it was very, very dramatic. And so in response to that crash, Demotica created Charging Bull, which took him 2 years, and he created it entirely at his own expense, $35,000 he put into it. And then when it's finally completed, he takes Charging Bull, sneaks it into Wall Street in the middle of the night, and installs it there on the sidewalk, and then leaves. So it is a piece of guerrilla art. Now, it's a piece of guerrilla art intended to represent the strength and power of the American spirit, and supposed to represent America's financial success and our growing strength in whatever. But it's very capitalistic, but you know, created by a guy who this was very important to him, and he invested his own money into doing it. And so here's this piece of capitalist art, but you know, created independently and installed guerrilla style. And everybody loved Charging Bull. Everybody thought Charging Bull was the coolest thing ever, except for some reason, the investment banks on Wall Street, who for some reason were offended by it and worked to have it removed, which they did. The police came and took away Charging Bull, all 7,000 pounds of it, and dragged it away to impound. Now, that brings up a protest from the people, because the people of the area love the statue so much that they convinced the city that, okay, the city will actually officially install Charging Bull. So Arturo Demotica, the artist, agreed to put the statue on loan to the city, and then they would install it there as a permanent display. So right now, the artist still owns that statue. It is his statue, but it is on permanent loan to the city of New York to be installed there. All right, that's Charging Bull. Now, Fearless Girl... where did Fearless Girl come from? Fearless Girl came from State Street Global. All right. State Street Global Advisors. They are an investment firm with assets on the order of $2.5 trillion. All right. So why do they need a statue? Because she's part of an ad campaign. It's an ad campaign for their Gender Diversity Index Fund. And the Gender Diversity Index Fund, has the stock ticker symbol of she, capital S-H-E, all right? And the plaque on Fearless Girl, if you take a look at the statue, the plaque says, "Know the power of women in leadership. She makes a difference." Again, capital S-H-E, she makes a difference. It is an ad for their stock fund. That's what Fearless Girl is, an ad. And here's the thing. Fearless Girl is awesome. I mean, she is really, really awesome. All right, take it outside of that context. Just look at Fearless Girl. It's a really well-done statue. And in the context of her facing off with Charging Bull, it's super powerful, and it's motivating and inspirational. She's really cool. But here's the thing. Demotica has a point. Fearless Girl draws her power from Charging Bull. If she were placed anywhere else, oh, she'd be a cool statue. She'd be a really cool statue. All right, but you put her anywhere else without the bull, wouldn't have the same impact. Her statement requires the bull, right? And at the same time, she requires the bull to make her impact. And at the same time, Charging Bull is changed by her, intended to represent the strength and spirit of the American people during a difficult economic time. Charging Bull now is the foil to Fearless Girl. Charging Bull is now the oppressive establishment, the male hierarchy that is keeping Fearless Girl down, that Fearless Girl needs to stand up to this oppression. So now suddenly, the artist had intended this to be the strength and spirit of the American people, and now Fearless Girl has turned his art into something else, something that he absolutely did not intend and did not want. And so therefore, when he says he'd really like Fearless Girl out of there, I get it. I get it. And the simple fact that Fearless Girl is an ad. Now, this is the other part, is that it seems to me now that the tide is turning against Fearless Girl, and she'll be gone soon enough because of this, but people feel really deceived by Fearless Girl. They feel like she, here she was all inspirational and everyone felt moved by her and they loved her and they thought she was awesome, and then found out she was an ad and went, oh my God, we've been duped. We've been duped. And now, finding out that she's an ad, yeah, that sucks to a degree, but does it make the statue any less impactful? I mean, the fact that a piece of art happened to be created for advertising, does it make it less of a piece of art? I mean, I guess it does. And certainly in these people's mind, but man, the tide is turning against Fearless Girl. And they're, I don't have an opinion one way or another. I think she's super cool. I really like Fearless Girl, and I think it was a cool statement and an awesome look. And yeah, I'm sorry that it's in service to an ad, so it cheapens it. It makes it look like it's a sellout sort of thing. But it doesn't change the fact that she is still a cool statue, and that just seeing her, not knowing that the advertise, not knowing her origin and the context of it being an ad for a gender diversity fund, was inspirational all by itself. When all you saw was the bull and the Fearless Girl, it was inspirational. It was powerful, powerful art. And now nobody wants her because she's an ad and we don't like being duped by ads. So that's too bad. It's too bad. All around, it's too bad. I mean, like I say, yeah, either way, I mean, I still get the Arturo Demotica. I get his point that it changes his statue and thus him wanting it out. I'm completely behind him on that. I'm completely behind him on the idea that, hey, look, if your girl needs a charging bull, then you know what? You make your own charging bull. Don't come over here and deface my statue, to draw power to yours. That's just not right. All right. But yeah, she's still really cool. So there you go. That's my unnamed history segment, which I brought very quickly into modern times. So this is super current history, like as of, yesterday and all. So there you go. All right. Now it is time for me. I've got a nerd rage boiling here, and sadly, I got to go to Scouts. So I'm going to pause here. We'll see what happens. And hopefully you guys have more podcasts after this. Hey, it's only been 3 hours, but I'm back. All right. Uh-oh. Get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, Rrr!
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. I had some other nerd rages, but let me tell you what. People are slobs, man. People are slobs. We just did 2 hours of highway cleanup, walking. I did 2.5 miles we put in, walking up and down the highway. I filled up a 50-pound bag worth of garbage. Everybody else had similar, 20, 30, 40 pounds. I mean, we must have pulled easily by the end of this day, must have pulled like 300 pounds of garbage off this stretch of highway. God, people are slobs. Seriously, what is wrong with you? And every single one of it, almost everything out there is beer cans, soda cans, water bottles. We didn't find any bottles of pee this time. Thank God. But we've usually found bottles of pee. It's cigarette packs. It is McDonald's stuff. Stuff from Casey's. It's a local convenience store that has a deli counter and this kind of stuff. Just fast food items. It's all convenience stuff. Anything that people are eating, drinking, or smoking as they're driving, they just pitch the hell out the window. Seriously? God, you people suck. I mean, I thought we were better than this. I remember when I was little, I remember doing that. But that was because, that was 40 years ago. And we hadn't seen The Crying Indian yet, and we didn't know any better. All right? But now, people know better. What is wrong with you? Good Lord, the amount of garbage out there was disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. It's actually good. The highway cleanup is a good education for the kids because every one of them is disgusted by the end of it. They're like, how can people do this? I'm like, because that's what they do. And so we've got a group of kids who, for the most part, they've seen what it does. They've seen what happens. They've seen how it is for the people who have to clean up after that and are more likely to be more careful in the future. So hopefully that's a good thing. But, God, people suck. Now, all right, that wasn't the nerd rage I started with. I was actually gonna do some raging about clickbait links because I am getting so annoyed now at sites that I like. And I'm Nerdist, Nerdist.com. I'm looking at you, all right? I follow Nerdist on Twitter and on Facebook, and I am sick and tired of the number of times the Nerdist sends me to clickbait. How dare you? I mean, do you just have someone running your social media who just picks any nerdy headline and shares it? What is wrong with you? God. Yeah, I mean, honestly. And when I say clickbait, if I follow a link and it's any sort of list that only contains one item per page, and I have to keep clicking on page after ad-filled page to see the entire list, and it takes forever because there's so many ads loading. And, oh, by the way, all the ads will load before the content does, guaranteed. That drives me nuts. Or even worse, they've started to do some where it's actually two or three pages per list item because you click on it and it shows you the picture. And then you click again and it's the same picture, but now with the caption. And then the same picture with the continuation of the caption. You people suck. Oh, I hate clickbait. And I hate the idea that websites that I like and that I thought, I mean, the number of times I've listened to Chris Hardwick to rant about our clickbait culture, and yet his social media under, you know, I obviously it's not him doing it. It's someone who's hired to run social media for him, but his social media under Nerdist.com is pushing this crap out on his fans. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So that's what I was going to rant about. And then I also, little bit of a rant, and this is a very personal thing, but all right, you know, I love self-checkout. I go to Walmart. I love self-checkout. Right now, our Walmart remodeled, and now we have, I believe, 19 self-checkout stands. 19. That's awesome. And they've got some that are just the little ones, and then they've got some that give you the full conveyor belt style so that you can actually load up a whole cart of groceries and do a whole cart on your own. Love doing that. That's the best. And so the first time I went to go try that, this was about a week ago, the first time I went to go try doing the conveyor belt, there is one woman in front of me. She's got like two items in her hand. And I thought, oh, okay, no problem. And she's sitting here. She's juggling some stuff. And her daughter is looking at something on the shelf that's next to it because the collectible card items are all right next to this register. So it's the magic cards and the Pokemon and the Yu-Gi-Oh! And some other stuff. And so she's like standing there holding the spot in line. So I wait and I wait. And her daughter finally hands her something. And she scans it. And then she waits, she looks at it, and she says, oh yeah, no, we don't want it. And then they walk away. She was just using the self-checkout as a price check. That's all she was doing. So she made me wait while she used up the machine to do a price check. And now, because since they're not designed to do that, now the machine's locked up because nobody put anything in the basket, nobody's standing there anymore. Until a manager comes over and removes that item and resets the machine, it's wasted. Oh, that woman pissed me off. That's probably the biggest rage all week, is I can't believe she wasted my time like that. But, anyway, there's all my miscellaneous rages that, I've now shortened up and condensed because I was just so annoyed at all the trash out there. Man. Of course, it also doesn't help that doing trash pickup, I'm just too out of shape for it. And so you're walking the ditches all the way down, all the way back. And so you're kind of walking on a slant sideways and using muscles you're not used to. So I kind of hurt right now. And I had to pee really bad. Damn it, I should have peed before I went. You know, damn it, they asked, and I said, no, I don't need to pee. Should have peed before I went. Anyway, that's enough of that. We are all done with the nerd rage.
Ooh, it appears you've received the sound drubbing.
All right, you know what? I was going to do some fingertips here to clear off my list, but now we've run a little bit longer than I thought, and God, Listener Betrayal's been open for 4 hours now, so I'm sure there's a ton of stuff in there. And oh man, look at the list. Look at all this stuff. Yep. All right, can I do it? You think I can do fingertips quick enough? Let's try and get through them.
Here.
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
All right, fingertips. This is just stuff that I haven't developed well enough to make it a full topic, but it's on my list, and so I want to make sure I talk about it. First one says jousting. Guess what? Eli, he's going to camp this summer. We go to Camp Cedars every summer, and I've talked about it a couple times before. And this year, he gets to take jousting. Jousting, because of all the stuff that he can take there, one of them, I tell him you have to take one of the required badges, because those are a pain in the butt, and you might as well get them done while you're there, and you've got professionals working with you. But then also, he can take all the rest of them, anything he wants to take, as long as it's merit badges. And then one slot open for something that's just for fun, not a merit badge. And it turns out that he turns 14 before camp starts, and none of his other friends do. And so therefore, he's the only one old enough for jousting. So he's rubbing their noses in it because he got his horsemanship badge last year. And so now he's going to apply that to jousting this year. And obviously they're not going to be doing real jousting, but they will be doing, they'll be riding with their sticks, and they'll be going for rings and targets and stuff like this. And so he's super excited about it. And I'm super excited for him. I can't wait to go see it. Although I don't know how much, that's Eli right there. I don't know how much time I'll get to spend with him while he's jousting, because it's Noah's first year at camp, and I kind of got to hang with Noah's group.
Wait, what?
I just told them that you're going to be taking jousting at Camp Cedars. Because I'm excited about it, and I think it's really cool for you. So,
okay. At least I'm going to be the only person in my class that says I've been jousting.
I know. I just told them you're the only one old enough for jousting. I just told them that. Isn't it awesome?
Oh, I left my phone here.
Okay. All right, that's it. See, jousting. The second one says, why I don't read. Yeah, when I was younger, up until I was, 30, probably, I read all the time. And then the internet kind of spoiled a lot of that. But why I don't read now, and I do read, but I don't read nearly as much as I used to or as voraciously. My problem is when I do, I know that once I start a book, I'll start casually, just reading it a little bit, It's on my phone. I have it with me whenever I need it. And so, if I've got a few minutes, I'll read a little bit. But then I get a few chapters in and I'm into it, and then I can't put it down. I can't stop reading. And so I will consume the entire thing in just a couple of days by not doing anything else. And I've always been like that, that once I get into a book, I don't stop. I won't, I'll stay up super late. I will go on way too little sleep because, I want to see what happens next. I squeeze in as much book as humanly possible. And so therefore, every time I have the opportunity to read a new book, and I've always got a stack of stuff waiting for me, I'm always a little bit intimidated because I know that, but if I do that, I know I'm going to be bad about it again. I can't pace myself. I wish I could. But I'm no good at that. And so it always turns into these marathon reading sessions where I'm not getting anything else done. So, that's why. But I really did enjoy my Stephen King novel that I just read. And I'm just only like 3 chapters into the new Percy Jackson. See, I'm into the pacing myself portion of it, and I'm trying to be moderate about it. But, God, it's so tough. Once it starts to get really good, I can't wait. So anyway, that's why. So, all right. Next thing on my fingertips list is the Go First Dice. I shouldn't have told you what they were. I am watching, there's a channel on YouTube called Stand Up Maths, and Stand Up Maths is hosted by Matt Parker, and he is, he's a stand up comic entertainer, but he's also a huge math nerd, loves math. And so he is discussing the design of footballs or soccer balls to us Americans. And he's looking at footballs and the patterns that are used to sew them together. And the standard football is just a truncated 20-sided die. So you take a regular 20-sided die and then you cut off corners and in the right pattern and you wind up with a soccer ball. And you can see that that's how they're stitched together and then inflated. But then they've been changing the design so that they're using, you can do either a truncated 12-sided die. Now they've got a really squiggly cube pattern that blows up into a sphere. It's really weird. But as he's demonstrating what these shapes all are, he is reaching over his shoulder into, on his shelf, he has just bins of dice, as, you know, any good nerd would. And so he's pulling out dice and holding them up to the camera to demonstrate what they are. And when he gets to a 12-sided figure, he holds up a 12-sided die, and the numbers on it are, the numbers I can see are like 4, 7, 18, 47, 10. I mean, it's just this weird set of numbers. And he, I don't see all the faces. I only see like 5 or 6 of them. But I write down the ones that I see because, okay, I gotta find out what that die is. So I do a search for 12-sided die and then that set of numbers. And it comes up and it shows me that these are from a set of Go First dice. And sure enough, when I go click on pictures of Go First dice, yep, that's the one he had. That's awesome. All right. This is a brilliant concept and a very elaborate solution for a problem that didn't really need an elaborate solution, which makes it beautiful. It is, the idea is when you roll dice to see who goes first, a lot of times there is a tie, and then you have a roll-off. And conceptually, conceivably, you know, you could roll off and tie again, and then roll and tie again. And this could go on ad nauseum. It doesn't ever. Eventually you get to the end of it. But it seemed like to these guys who designed the Go First dice, it seemed like an imperfect solution. That you know, you have this method that doesn't always give us a real answer. And so you have to redo it until you get a real answer. And they said, is there a way to design a set of dice that you can roll so that each of the dice has an equal potential of coming up the higher number? And so they did. They invented the Go First dice and the full set. Now, God, I want a set of these so bad, even though I need them. Am I going to carry around a set of Go First dice just for these occasions? Probably not, but man, they'd be cool to have. And it is a set of 4 12-sided dice. And they are numbered between the 4 of them from 1 to 48, but no number is used on more than one die, so therefore you can never have ties. But if you pick any 2 dice at random of these 4, pick up any 2 dice and roll them, each one has a 50-50 chance of having the higher number. They're always even, so they're always fair. If you pick up any 3 of the dice and roll them, each die has an absolutely equal chance of either being first, second, or third in order. Pick up 4 dice, it's always going to be an even chance of coming in first, second, third, or fourth. I think that's brilliant. It's just a beautiful set of dice. And once you see how the numbers are laid out, it's a really simple numbering scheme, but it was just so clever and such an elaborate solution for, you know, a problem that really, I mean, the biggest problem is it just gets dramatic and we have to roll an extra time or maybe 2 or 3 extra times. I mean, that's the issue that we have. And so they came up with the Go First dice as a solution to that. I think they're gorgeous. I am so in love with these dice. Okay, plus, they have 12 sides. How cool is 12-sided dice, right? All right. Next on my fingertips list, I lied to the air conditioning guy. I feel bad about that. The air conditioning went out, as it does at the beginning of every season. And so, you know, every year, air conditioning fails on the first hot day. We call the air conditioning guys. They send somebody out. The guy charges it up. And then sometimes they need to put some stop leak in it, but sometimes they don't. Either way, you know, after 1 or 2 visits, we're good for the whole summer. So, okay, you know, now we're good. But the guy shows up and he asks about the filter. And because the line had frozen over, and that's what stopped it. And so he asks about the filter, and I'm like, oh, God, the filter. I think the filter was really old, but I don't know. I didn't write down the last time I changed it, so I didn't know how old the filter was. And so technically, because, I mean, mine's, it's a furnace filter, but the air conditioning and the furnace both go through the same, air duct, and therefore I need a filter no matter what. It was weird. I ran into somebody while I was buying the new filters. I ran into somebody who, he's like, Jesus, what the hell are you doing? Winter's over. And I'm like, well, yeah, but my air conditioning runs through the same unit. It's, oh, really? And he seemed baffled by that. I'm like, I thought that's how they all worked. So anyway, the filter, I know I'm supposed to change it every month or so, but this one, I didn't write it down. I didn't know how old it was. It could have been a month. It could have been 3 months. I don't know. I would bet somewhere right in between there. I'm guessing it was right around 2 months for the filter, but I don't know for sure. And so I got a new filter in before the air conditioning guy shows up. And when he gets there, he asks me and says, so, is the filter clean? And I said, oh, yeah, filter's clean. I said, I just changed it. I said, before that, it had only been a few weeks. So, you know, it's fine. And I lied to him. I lied to him because I knew it had been longer than that. I knew it had been overdue. And it's possible that the freezing could have just been because I didn't change the filter, but I knew that wasn't it because that's never what it is. We've done this a million times. But what if it was? And so here he is looking at the lines and going over everything and trying to figure out where the problems are. And I'm like, God, you know what? I hate it when people do that to me as the computer guy. I hate it when I come in and they lie to me about what they've tried or what they did to it. And I'm like, you know, what if having the dirty filter in it could have been contributing to something that he needs to know about, and otherwise I'm sending him down a wild goose chase because he thinks that wasn't the problem, and so I finally had to fess up to him. I felt bad, but I actually fessed up. I'm like, all right, I lied to you, and I don't know why I lied to you, but the filter was old, but it's clean now. He's like, oh, all right, no, that's fine. That's not what the issue is. As long as I know it's clean now, that's all that matters. Oh, okay, shit. I didn't have to tell him anything. Damn. All right, but I'm glad I did because I don't even know why. It was just that moment of quick embarrassment. He's like, so is the filter clean? And like, I just panicked because I knew it had been old. And so I just panicked and just lied by instinct because it's clean now. So, you know, yeah, it was, it's fine. And then not 5 minutes later, I'm like, why in the hell would I lie? That is the stupidest thing in the world. This is a guy who's trying to help me. If I don't give him accurate information, then how is he going to be able to help me? So I fixed it, but I felt bad. If I had just told the truth in the beginning, I wouldn't have had to then further embarrass myself by admitting I lied. So I'm an idiot. All right. Anyway, okay. There's the last thing on the fingertips list. Whew, we got through it. And it's, in fact, it's called Lasts. Ooh, it's mostly Scout stuff, but this was our last Pinewood Derby. I've made 19 Pinewood Derby cars, and I don't ever have to make another one. Oh, that feels so good. Oh, man, I've had plenty of Pinewood Derby cars. I mean, Mike, aren't you going to miss it? No. No, I'm not. I have great memories. It'll be awesome. And to go along with the last Pinewood Derby car, my last Scout cake. My last cake for the father and son cake auction. Oh, thank God. I mean, again, 18 cakes. I've had plenty. No, 19 cakes? 18 cakes. I can't remember. Anyway, I've made a lot of cakes. And now I don't have to do that again. Let's see. So all done with Cub Scouts, which means I'm all done with leadership in Scouts. I'll still, you know, I'll be technically the assistant Scoutmaster in the Boy Scouts, but I don't have to do any planning anymore. It's no longer my job to come up with plans and organize things and fill out paperwork, and I don't have to do any of that. Oh, it's going to be so nice. I'm so looking forward to this. It's like we had a series of these lasts when Noah was little. The, oh my God, that's the last time we had to buy diapers. You know, that was the last time we had to change a poopy pants. Oh, the last time we were going to have a baby that didn't sleep through the night. The last time we were going to have to deal with, oh, some of these lasts, so nice. I mean, there's some things that you miss, but yeah, that's what grandkids will be for later. It's just some of these things, it's like, you know what? I'm ready to be done with those. I've been doing it for 20 years. I'm ready to be done with this part of it. That's fine. And in fact, you know, you would have thought we got a little wistful because, this is the last year that the Easter Bunny's coming to our house. So the Easter Bunny, Easter Bunny actually technically didn't have to come to our house this year because, you know, all of our kids are older. And so, you know, they're getting too old for Easter egg hunts. And so therefore there was no reason for them to show up. And you'd think, you know, I mean, we went ahead and decorated eggs and we got ready, but then found out that, oh, you're too old. Okay. Well, I guess we're done then. So, which didn't surprise us. We've just been waiting for him to tell us, but we had to get to that point. But anyway, it is, you would think, you know, there's maybe some sad, wistful, oh, well, gosh, the end of an era. The magic, that part of the magic is just, it's just not here anymore. And you know what? No, it's like, guess what? I'm ready to move on to other stuff. It's nice to not have that pressure. It's nice to not have that stuff to do because we've got all sorts of other stuff that we're doing. So anyway, it was just a lot of lasts all came up with Easter and with the end of Cub Scouts and all of this stuff. It was a bunch of lasts all hit us all at once. And I thought about how nice some of them are because as much fun as I had doing a lot of these things over the years, I mean, we just had, Jacob had been telling a friend of his how when he was little, you know, we had things like, well, we had a trail of bunny poop across our floor after the Easter Bunny visited. And of course it was chocolate chips, but you know, a trail of bunny poop across the floor. Or, the times that we would go out and, you know, make reindeer footprints in the snow at Christmas time and things like that. And yeah, we had a blast doing those things. It was a lot of fun and it was cute. And his friend was like, wow, I can't believe your parents did all that for you. That is so cool. And I'm like, you know, we didn't realize that was anything unusual. We were just, you know, playing along. Although on the other hand, we also just had Aiden came to us and he's like, do you guys remember the time you tried to convince me my name was spelled with two A's at the beginning? We're like, what? He goes, yeah, I was in like second grade or so. And I knew how my name was spelled. I'd been spelling my name for years, but you guys really, you worked really hard to try and convince me that my name was actually spelled A-A-D-A-N. That it had two A's at the beginning. I'm like, why would we do that? And he says, well, because you were trying to convince me that you did it so that my name would always be first alphabetically, that I'd always be at the top of every list all the time. And Lisa and I both had the exact same reaction of, wow, I don't remember doing that, but yeah, that sounds exactly like us. I'm pretty sure we did that. That, yes. I mean, it's, does that mean? Because it's the kind of thing that we do a lot, and it's really, really funny. And yeah, he didn't fall for that one, but there are some of them that they do fall for. God, I wish I had a good example off the top of my head. Anyway, all right. Enough. Time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, are you asking? Go ahead, ask me. Ask me where they come from. Yeah, well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Haver on about something. There you go. Send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And before I get to that number, dudes, you know what? You guys are slacking. We have a lot of Pod-O-Matics, a lot. Okay. I'm not short on them. We're not in any danger of running out. But what you need to know is that Kyle now owns 40% of the list. 40%. He just sent me a butt ton because he's apparently my biggest fan. And therefore, he owns 40% of the list. So, I hope you guys like the Kyle show, because that's what this is going to be. So now watch. Watch him not get any in this show. Wouldn't that be funny? 54 is where we start. And 54 comes from someone named, where is it? Oh, so close. No, it's Ronster. See, it's not Kyle at all. What was I worried about? And Ronster says, what movie are you most looking forward to seeing this year? I am really looking forward to seeing Guardians of the Galaxy, book 2. And I am really looking forward to seeing, Star Wars Episode 8. And I am really looking forward to seeing The City of Valerian. Is that the name of it? Is that the one from Luc Besson? It's the guy who made Fifth Element. And his new sci-fi epic for this summer. Ever since I saw the first trailer, I have been in love with this movie. It looks like Fifth Element with a much bigger budget. It looks like that kind of imagination. And I love Fifth Element. I love Fifth Element. I think it's a great movie. I think, and you know what? In spite of everyone's criticism, I've said this before, I will maintain this. Chris Tucker was one of the best things in that movie. Chris Tucker was awesome. That was that character. Ruby Rod is, he's epic. Absolutely epic. I thought the whole movie was wonderful. And so I am actually looking forward to this one. I don't always like everything Luc Besson does, but I like a lot of it. And I thought Fifth Element was good, and I think Valerian, I think that's what it's called. I think it looks awesome. And so I'm looking forward to that one. And then there's I can't remember the name. Something Montana. What's the name of that one? It's Three Billboards Outside Something Missouri. Anyway, it's from the guy who brought us Seven Psychopaths. And I love all of his work. And so whatever this one is, this Billboards Outside of Something, I think it's Missouri. I could look it up. But that would take away from the unique homespun flavor of this segment. So I'm really looking forward to that one because, again, I like his work. I especially like Seven Psychopaths. And so looking forward to seeing what he does. But there you go. Number seven. And number seven is... Hey, it's from Kyle. I told you. Told you he'd be on here. And Kyle says, what is your favorite rap song that's not like a jokey song? Huh. That's an odd question. Why would you have to put on the jokey qualifier as if... I mean, that really, really implies some horrible things about my taste in music. Like you say, hey, what's your favorite rap song? And I was going to say, oh, dude, parents just don't understand. Like, seriously, but to answer your question seriously, off the top of my head, my favorite rap song, Close Edge by Mos Def is the first thing that comes to my mind. I saw it on Chappelle's show. I love that song. I think Close Edge is a brilliant, brilliant piece of work. Break Your Neck by Busta Rhymes. In fact, anything by Busta Rhymes. I love Busta Rhymes. Even that, duet he did with, Eminem. Oh God, what is the name of that one that he did with Eminem? I cannot remember. Oh God. Although you know what? I like some of Eminem's stuff too. I mean, it's overly commercial at times. And he's not as clever as he thinks he is, but you know, I like Eminem. I like a lot of white boy rap. It's Beastie Boys. You know, I enjoy the Beastie Boys with rap and non-rap. I thought they were very talented. I occasionally like a song by Iggy Azalea, you know, if you want to talk about white rap. But let me go ahead and look. Let me pull up my iTunes. Hold on a second. Okay. Ooh, wow. All right, under rap, Gold Digger? Sure, that's not bad. Let's see. Oh, God, Rosanna. Rosanna by Wax. Rosanna is that even a rap song? Is that it's listed as rap hip-hop. Yeah, it's not really a rap song, but, oh, man, I love Rosanna. Oh, man. And then, okay, Bama. With Sweet Home Alabama. All right, that one's kind of jokey, but kind of not, but well, I like that. I'm going to go back to either Close Edge by Mos Def or Break Your Neck by Busta Rhymes. Wow. God, there's so many good ones on here. I'm going to stick with those two. I'm going to stick with those two and be done. There he goes. Number 60. And 60 is from, let's see. Oh, I have it. There it is. It's Mrs. Darks. Hi, Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, what was the last thing you saw that was so beautiful it moved you to tears? Oh, jeez. I don't remember. Okay, I do remember, but I'm embarrassed. Here's the thing. Beautiful, happy, touching stuff moves me to tears pretty easily. I'm a softy that way. And it's not, you know, I don't sit there bawling at most stuff, but I will mist up. I will sometimes I'll mist up. My eyes are wet. And if it's really good, I'll have a tear roll down my face. It'll be, and I'm sure it happens to me a lot. So I'm sure the last one was like an episode of Grey's Anatomy. We've been watching a lot of Grey's Anatomy just as it's our new go-to show for when you don't really need to pay attention. But, you know, it's something that you're kind of following and you know you enjoy, but you don't have to pay attention to it. And that's Grey's Anatomy. And so it's our new go-to show for that stuff. And, you know, for a show where, honestly, half the characters in every show, and it's always different half, you know, they shuffle it up, but every single episode, half of the characters learn something powerful about themselves. Every episode, half of the characters have an epiphany of some sort and learn a really valuable life lesson, which is amazing because they are so messed up all the time. I mean, like they keep learning stuff and it makes sense and it lets them move forward. And yet no one's any closer to being happy or fulfilled or, oh man, every single episode, there's always, it is the most drama you can pack into one hospital. I'm telling you. I've never watched Grey's Anatomy before. Never. And so, my wife started watching it just as a filler thing, a few weeks ago, and then I started following along as one of those that, oh, now I've seen enough episodes that I know who everybody is. I actually give a crap about their relationships. I can see why the thing's been on for 11 or 12 years. That makes sense. Okay. I get it now. I never did understand the appeal of Grey's Anatomy because apparently I never watched it. But now I have. And so I know the last time I saw something that made me tear up like that, it was watching Grey's Anatomy. I'm sure it was. But I do that a lot. I do. I mean, there have been times that I will listen to an episode of something on NPR, on public radio, where they're giving us a news story out of Sudan, and it'll be some either, you know, story of amazing human tragedy or some story of amazing human kindness, both of which will move me to tears as I'm driving my car to work. It just happens. So yeah, the last time that it happened was Grey's Anatomy, which is a really lame one. But yeah, I'm sure there are better examples of watching, you know, some very powerful moving video that I cried at, but I just can't think of them off the top of my head because they haven't been as recent. So there you go. 34. This will be the last one. 34 is from, it's from Kyle, surprise. And Kyle says, if you had to listen to just one song on repeat for the rest of your life, what would it be? One song on repeat for the rest of my life. Holy cow. Well, now that I just said it out loud, Rosanna by Wax, but God, any song though. I mean, that happens to be one of my favorites at the moment. But man, any song on repeat forever is going to get really tedious. So maybe I want something easy listening just to get out. Oh man. Although, what is the name of the song? It's the one that, it's a Wings song. Paul McCartney sings it, and, it's got the one line in it about "We're so sorry, Uncle Albert." Oh my God. That song has been, cause the tempo picks up and slows down and it changes and it sounds like a bunch of different songs. I mean, Hands Across the Water, Hands Across the, they all sound so different and yet they're all tied together in the same unified song. And I have been having snippets of that song, different pieces of the song run through my head on nonstop replay for probably about 3 weeks. It's killing me. Kill me. It's not a horrible song, but it ain't a great song. But man, I cannot get it out of my head. Ugh, driving me batty. So, all right, to finish up Kyle's question, he says, did you say Xanadu? Oh, I bet you said Xanadu. Dude, I totally said Xanadu. It's like you're in my head. You know me. Wow, you are good at this. Okay, and that's it. Let's turn on over to GLaDOS, and she'll give us a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, and Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget that this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to it on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and write us a nice 5-star review, because those things actually make a difference the way they aggregate these things. So if you really want to do something nice for this podcast, though, something even nicer than that, recommend it to your friends. Because honestly, if you enjoy it, why wouldn't you spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well? Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for my Podomatic, especially if you want to bump Kyle out of that list, or at least marginalize him to some degree. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of the grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forum/nerds. Gah, I can't believe I did that. That's been a while. Sign up and send me a message. We will hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun! And now it is time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and I go up to Facebook and I post up, hey guys, I'm recording. Anything that they post up on those threads, I will read right here at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. So, what do you guys want? You want me to start off on the website or you want me to start off on Facebook? All right, Facebook it is. Let's do it. Facebook has a ton of responses because it's been forever. And let's see, here we go. All right. Starts off with Akiva, and Akiva says, you should call F. Mary Kill the Henry VIII, because he did all three. All right. Good observation. I will agree with you on that. But I'm not going to change it, because I've already gotten bedwed and beheaded, so I'm keeping it. Just like Listener Betrayal. Yeah, you know what? I tried changing it, but once it's been named, it's been named. We're done. All right. Next one is from Kaz. Kaz says, what's your feeling on alternate social media like Instagram or Tumblr? Okay, I feel like Twitter is worthless to me because I just don't use it enough. It just, anything I want to do, I do on Facebook. And actually, even the stuff on Facebook, a lot of times I have to force myself because I just would rather do it on my forums or here on the show itself. And I keep forgetting that, yeah, you know, I need some social media presence to kind of stir things up. And so I'm actually, my wife is trying to convince me that I need Snapchat and Instagram, and I might as well do Tumblr while I'm at it. And there are some great services out there that will do posts across all social media platforms. So no matter how somebody follows me, when I make one post, it goes to all of these, and thus people can see what it is that I've got going on. I probably won't ever do that, but I might. We'll see. And then, of course, I need a subreddit. So my son says he's going to work on that with me. Then the next one is from my wife. And my wife says, don't forget Scouts at 4 o'clock. Oh, thank God I didn't. But, you know, I'm glad you reminded me. And then next is from Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth said, did you guys march for science? No, we did not march. We followed the march here at home, and we talked about it. But no, we did not go out and march ourselves. I don't even know that there was a march here in our town. I would be amazed if there was. I'm sure there was in Omaha. I'm sure there was in Lincoln. But no, we did not ourselves go out and march for science. I would expect Dr. Noah, this is Sarah Beth again. She says, I would expect Dr. Noah to be all over that. Yes, actually, the whole prospect excites him. So she says, our local one had about 1,500 participants, which was a little disappointing with three universities within the city, two of which are specifically for science. But the solidarity, passion, and love of science, each other, and Mother Earth were amazing. As I had to miss the March for Women, it mattered double for me, so I was glad to be there with my children. I saw your pictures. It was really cool. I'm glad for you. That's awesome. Let's see. And then she has replies. Oh, it's replies from herself. Oh, there's more pictures. Look at that. Oh, it's both of her kids holding up March for Science signs. They're adorable. Cute kids. All right. The next one is from Ron. Ron says, hi, Mike. I hope you're having a great Sunday. Well, I am now that I am not hiking the highway picking up trash. Please elucidate on the benefits of RPGs and their positive effects on our minds. Oh, please. It's self-explanatory. They are, they encourage creativity. They encourage, teamwork and interaction. They encourage social skills and problem-solving skills. They, you've gotta have numbers. You've gotta have, critical thinking and statistics. There is so much good about RPGs that I can't imagine. It's such positive interactions. The only thing that would make it better is if you could be getting physical exercise at the same time. If only there was a way to combine it into some sort of live action version of role playing. Wouldn't that be really cool? Oh man. And then the benefits are limitless. But yeah, no, RPGs are absolutely wonderful for everybody. I can't say enough about how much I love these games and how good I think they are for people. So there you go. Ron also says, you also said last episode that you would never play a Die 100 RPG. How many of them have you played, and do you think it was the product of the product or the system that was a turnoff? I have played several when I was younger, most notably the Top Secret game. Star Frontiers had a lot of Die 100 stuff in it. I know there was a lot of others. And the thing is that Die 100, when you're designing a game, when people think that reality is that somehow more detail equals more reality. And in my opinion, you're never going to get a game system that models reality well enough. And so it's better to have a game system that provides a framework and then encourages you to interpret stuff within that framework to make it seem realistic. That's in my mind. I like looser systems a little bit better. But the Die 100 stuff that I did use was just, again, it was just kind of a turnoff. The idea that you needed that fine a gradient, it just never made any sense to me. Now, the games that I played with Die 100, some of them I really enjoyed and some of them I didn't. And I didn't enjoy the Die 100 part of it, but I think, again, the system is never the make or break for me of a game. When I play a role-playing game, even if it's a bad system, if it's a good world with good characters and plots and lots of hooks to hang things on, then I've made wonderful stories and had an awesome time with my friends, even playing some of the crappiest systems out there. So as much as I don't like the Die 100s, that's not going to be the make or break. For me, if a system's bad, it's because the story is bad. It's because the development is bad. It's because there's something missing or incomplete or something nonsensical about it. Or something that, I mean, sometimes it's stuff that just doesn't appeal to my sensibility. A lot of times, the reason I don't like a game is because I don't know the genre well enough. Like, the first time I played Top Secret, I had not watched, I don't know if I'd ever watched more than one James Bond movie. And if you're going to play 007, or if you're going to play Top Secret, if you're going to play a spy role-playing game, you need to have seen a bunch of spy movies. You need to have read some spy novels. You need to have seen, you know, all of the James Bond stuff, and you need to see some other stuff to go with it to get an idea of what that world is like and what kind of back and forth you get between characters and what sort of clues they're looking for and how plots typically develop. And I didn't know any of that. And so therefore, I didn't know how to construct a story in that sort of setting. And so therefore, it may have been a great setting. It may have had all sorts of wonderful things about it, but I did not know the genre well enough to be able to play in that. You throw me into, a D&D style fantasy or a superhero setting or a lot of sci-fi settings. I've done millions of those. I've read millions of those. I've read those books. I have watched those TV shows. I've seen those movies. I've read the comic books. I can play those because I know the worlds really well. But a lot of other stuff, like Gamma World, the first time I touched it, didn't enjoy it so much because I wasn't so familiar with the post-apocalyptic genre. I was only a kid. But then later in my life, I came back to other post-apocalyptic games, and I really enjoy them because I know what that survival-type horror post-apocalyptic sort of feel is supposed to be. And it made more sense. So, yeah, but anyway, yeah, no, it's never the system that turns me off completely. At least I can't think of a time where it was solely the system that broke me from a game. But who knows? Ron continues now. Last question. I will be hosting a game event soon at our library and then another one at our church. What are your top go-to games for those who are new to the hobby or are only used to Ameritrash games? Monopoly, Sorry, etc. I've never heard the term Ameritrash in that sense. Which, man, it seems unfair, but Monopoly does suck. So, my go-to games right now are, Sushi Go and Simon's Cat and Zombie Dice. These are the card games, dice games that will let you sit down with somebody and play quick. Cobras. Oh, I love Cobras. Go look for the Cobras card game. You can still, it's free to print. I mean, you'd have to print it up, cut it out. I just put mine in little card sleeves to make it work. But Cobras is an awesome game because it feels familiar to people. Well, if they are into trick-taking games, then it feels familiar. You know, it's like, okay, well, it's a trick-taking game. It's like Pitch or it's like Spades or Hearts or something like that. But, oh, here's the twist. And it gives them something new to do that is really cool. And so I've been able to get some people into different games just by doing that. So all of that is really good. And as I just reviewed earlier, as long as they're within the right age range, which is, you know, again, about 15 to 50, or the Oregon Trail card game is really good. It gives them a sense of the, co-op style of game, while, of course it is pretty drastic, but it gives you a co-op game with a real nostalgic feel. But again, they'd have to know that they're going to lose. You just got to know you're going to lose the first few times you play it. In fact, I haven't played it enough to actually win it yet. So maybe you have to lose every time. I don't know. But these are the card games I'm thinking of off the top of my head. And I know there's a couple more. Spotted. Spotted is a great one. Spotted is so easy. Any age can play. And who is going to be the best person there has nothing to do with experience or age or anything like that. It is... There's just some people that are better at Spotted than others, and it's really fun and super simple. Anyone can figure it out. And with a lot of these, it keeps people engaged because like with Spotted or with Sushi Go especially, it's not like you're taking turns so much. I mean, you are taking turns, but everybody's got something to do all the time. It's like there's not a whole lot of downtime while you're waiting for it to go around the table and get back to you. We're all moving at once, and it's really cool. If you want to get into board games, then, I mean, again, boy, I think that Forbidden Island I just played was really good, and it was really simple to understand. I mean, I think, you know, that you could be getting, you know, 8 and 9 year olds in on that, and they'd be getting it perfectly well as, you know, adults like myself could easily enjoy that game. I did enjoy that game. That was really good. Ticket to Ride. I just played some Ticket to Ride this weekend for the first time in months. And Ticket to Ride is a great board game. Let's see. Settlers of Catan is a classic favorite. Catan is like everybody's intro to non-standard games. And so as such, it's kind of cliche that way. But, you know, it has that reputation for a reason. It does. It's good. Carcassonne. I love Carcassonne. If you've not picked up Carcassonne, it's a beautiful tile-laying puzzle-style game that you feel like you're playing a jigsaw puzzle while at the same time you're trying to work the strategy for points and claiming land and territory and stuff. And it's just really cool. These are all really, really good ones. You want a great basic intro to co-op games. Forbidden Island was already a good intro to co-op games. But Castle Panic is a great, great intro to co-op games. These are all really good ideas for some basic stuff that people are going to be able to catch on to easily and enjoy without any trouble, and it will be stuff that they've never seen before and give them the idea that, oh, there's games other than, because, yeah, again, so many people think that it's Clue, Monopoly, Sorry, Risk, Payday, and then, oh, yeah, well, if you don't want that, Scrabble, which is way too thinky for some people, or party games like Trivial Pursuit, you know, Pictionary, Scattergories, which are all fine party games, but they're not, it's not the same. It doesn't have the same level or when they think card games, they think of, you pull out a deck of cards and then we have all these different rules for how to use this single deck of cards. And it's like, no. Look, I got decks of cards after decks of cards here. I got stuff and it's all different and it's all new and it can be really exciting for people. So, That's just a small look at them. That's a handful. But those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head. So, I hope that helps. And seriously, honestly, if you seriously would like some more advice, let me know, because I'll get to it. And then Ron lied to me because he said that was the last question. And yet, here's another question. It says, please read this in your best Count Rugen voice from The Princess Bride. I know where it's from. You don't have to tell me. Who do you think you're talking to? Oh, good, and it's a Count Rugen quote, so, whew, thank God, that'll make it a little easier. And I'll still suck at it, but that's fine. As you know, The concept of the suction pump is centuries old. Really, that's all this is, except instead of sucking water, I'm sucking life. I've just sucked 1 year of your life away. I might one day go as high as 5, but I really don't know what that would do to you. So let's just start with what we have. What did this do to you? Tell me. And remember, this is for posterity, so be honest. How do you feel? There. Is that good? Okay. And the correct answer is something like that. And then, God, he said it was his last question, yet here's another one. Ron says, how awesome is Talvin? And DM Darks answers that one and says, Talvin is so awesome that he's DM Darks' sugar daddy. That's how awesome he is. Yeah, Talvin's pretty damn cool. We like him. All right, and then there's me saying, done. See, I told you there's going to be a lot of listener betrayal. Let's head on over to my forums at nerdpryradio.com/nerds. And there's a lot here, too. So, Kyle says, hey, when God gives you lemons, you should squeeze them until your hands hurt. Then question your religion. Good, no question. That was easy. And then Talvin says, around the election, you discussed expanding the media that you consume in order to avoid an echo chamber effect. How's it going? Not bad. Not bad. I assume that I've only constructed a slightly different echo chamber. But there were a lot of them that I realized that on the left and the right, there's a lot of stuff that I simply couldn't tolerate because it was just extremist bullshit lies. And it took me, I weeded out the conservative right-wing fake news faster than I weeded out the left-wing fake news. But I finally got most of them out of there. And so now most of what I have is very, middle of the road, more left-leaning than right-leaning, but it's mostly middle of the road stuff that does quality research, but still, you know, Wall Street Journal. Look, I like Wall Street Journal. I think they have good reporting. I think they do a lot of great work. And yes, they are right-leaning. And yes, their editorials are going to come down on the conservative side, although they still don't like Trump, but they're still also conservative. And I'm okay with that. You know, as long as I can feel that a news source is not blind, I mean, I can feel like the news source is actually, whatever they're reporting is the truth, okay? They're reporting, or at least they're reporting what they have really worked to determine is the closest to the truth that they can get, that they're actually doing real reporting. And so I try and stick to those news sources, and I have to feel like, yeah, even though among those, you know, you can be a source that does real good research and provides real good news articles, but, you know, you choose to present only certain articles. You choose to focus more on certain articles. And so, you know, their political leanings will become apparent over time, but that's okay. I don't mind if you're right-leaning or left-leaning as long as I feel like your news is accurate. And so, I started off with a big wide selection of stuff, and then I slowly clipped the edges until I'm down to, something that is centered around a point just a little bit left of center, probably. So there you go. And I feel better about this bubble than I do about the last one. Then Talvin says, any big plans for this summer besides Gen Con? I'm going to do Camp Cedars again, and this will be the first year that Noah is going. So I'll have Noah and Eli there, and that'll be cool. And the whole family is going to take a family vacation, presumably to Oklahoma, but we don't know for sure yet. But I think we're going to go to Oklahoma, and there's a place there with waterfalls and a castle, and it's pretty damn cool. So we're probably going to do that. And then I don't know what else. We'll see. There's probably a camping trip in there with the whole family, but we'll find out. So, also from Talvin, bedwetter behead, Kirk Spock McCoy. Oh, all right, this is easy. I am going to, I gotta behead McCoy. McCoy is straight out because his negativity is just too much for me. The guy is just a pessimist, and I couldn't live with that. Kirk, obviously, look, Kirk is going to be the bed. That's what he does. It's his job. So that leaves me Spock to marry. And thus, we will have a long fruitful marriage full of intellectual pursuits. And because I'm betting he's a gamer. So, you know, I've seen him play multi-level space Star Trek chess, whatever that thing is. So I'm sure he's a gamer, and he'll fit right in. Talvin then says, what kind of microphone do you use to record your podcast? I don't know, whatever this new one is. Both of my mics are just regular USB plug and play, and I cannot remember what the, hold on, I'll go look it up. It's right here in Amazon. I just bought the damn thing. Okay, it is a Fifine, F-I-F-I-N-E, Fifine plug and play home studio USB condenser microphone, and it is, $21.99 currently at Amazon. So there you go. It was their recommended pick, and after looking through a whole bunch of stuff, yeah, I was right on board with that one. So that one's pretty cool. And that's the mic I use. I use my other mic, my old one, is a $23 mic that is very similar, different company, but still a USB mic with the same kind of design and a little built-in stand to it. And that's all I use. So, and now I have two of them, and again, hopefully by next week we'll see how well they play together. We'll find out. So, let's see. Now I've lost my place because I wasn't paying attention. Oh, that's right. I was on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Talvin says, how awesome is DM Darks? I think we've covered that, but he is pretty damn awesome. And how awesome is Level 11 Dothan? Level 11 Dothan is spectacular. I so wish we could have played this week because I can't wait. I don't know. How many arrows do you get per round? Seriously, Talvin, how many arrows do you get per round? You gonna be cranking out four? Four arrows in a round? Three arrows in a round? Well, guess what? Every one of them add on about 6 to 7 points of damage from me. You're welcome. Oh, I love this. I mean, that's every single hit, 6 or 7 points of damage from me. I cannot wait. Yeah. My own little piddly arrows, I'm getting two around and I'm doing nothing for damage because I can't hit crap. That's fine. Who cares? I will supplement everybody else, and that makes me super happy. So, Level 11 Dothan is awesome. Let's see. Talvin says, why? Well, I just told you why. Because. Talvin then says, well, why not? Well, dude, what do you mean, why not? We're doing this. There is no why not. It's all on. All of it. Yeah, that's right. And the next is Kyle. Kyle says, bedhead or behead. Jamie Gertz, circa The Lost Boys, or Susanna Hoff, circa Walk Like an Egyptian. Susanna Hoff. Susanna Hoff was, I was so in love with her when she walked like an Egyptian. Oh, she was so adorable. Oh my God. I mean, look, Jamie Gertz was swell. Oh, very, very much like Jamie Gertz, especially in Lost Boys, but, Susanna Hoff was so cute back then. And then Kyle says, Aaron Moran died today. I know, I heard that. That is just weird, isn't it? For those of you who don't know, Aaron Moran was Joni from Happy Days. Kyle says, Chachi probably doesn't care, but I'm a little sad. Poor Joni. You know what? I'm sure Chachi does care because, God, they worked together for years. I mean, Christ, they were kids together on Happy Days, and then they had a show together, and I'm sure they've kept in touch. God, that's terrible. So, I mean, I didn't know her, and I didn't know anything about her after Joni Loves Chachi was over. So, you know, it's not like I can sit here and be all wistful about it because it's not like I was following her career. But yeah, weird, huh? Okay. And then that's it. I'm all done. So, hey guys, thanks for bearing with me on this one. You guys have been awesome. I love you a lot. I will see you next week. Have a good time. Say goodnight, R2.